Indian boarding schools. Then,
the only people who don't have regrets are 5-year-olds, people with brain damage, and sociopaths. The rest of us have regrets.
Understanding the gut-wrenching feeling of regret. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Oh, these polymers aren't as flexible as Batch K3.
Researcher Laurie is stretched thin.
Did you get the vulcanization analytics from V66? Wait, are these rubber scores from last week?
She needs to hire new lab technicians so she can bounce back into her old self.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our matching platform lets you spend less time searching and more time connecting with candidates. Redeem your $75 credit at Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply.
Ethnic cleansing is often seen as a tragedy that happens far from American soil. Massacres like the Holocaust, the Rwandan genocide, or the ongoing Rohingya crisis in Myanmar. We Americans might shake our heads and point fingers at these countries, but we're not immune to these atrocities. In the late 1800s, thousands of Native American children, some as young as 5 years old, were taken from their homes and forced into boarding schools. Not only were they separated from their parents and tribes, but they were stripped of their native identities and languages. And this wasn't just about assimilation. It was an organized attempt to systematically erase indigenous culture.
It was considered sort of a bloodless response to the quote-unquote Indian problem in the United States, which was their interference with westward expansion. And the thought was through various assimilative policies that that would make it easier, and that is to take away their heritage and their language.
That's Mary Annette Pember, a citizen of the Red Cliff Ojibwe tribe and a national correspondent for ICT News, formerly known as Indian Country Today. She's also the author of Medicine River, a story of survival and the legacy of Indian boarding schools. In her book, she uncovers how these schools were the first step of a larger plan.
Sending Native students to boarding schools was preceded by other far-reaching assimilationist policies like Indian removal from their lands and allotment, which was the goal was to create private landowners. And what it ended up doing was really separating Native peoples from their ability to survive and feed their families, and arguably, you know, had a greater impact than any of the other assimilationist style policies.
The boarding school policy wasn't a blip in history. It lasted for 150 years. Together, the federal government and the Catholic Church ran over 400 of these schools across the country and housed tens of thousands of Native children. Official reports estimate that about 1,000 children died and were buried on school grounds. However, Pember and other Native Americans argue that this number is far larger, pushing into the tens of thousands. The common causes for death were starvation, tuberculosis, and broken hearts. One of the first federal boarding schools was the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania. Former Civil War Lieutenant Richard Henry Pratt founded it in 1879. His motto was, "Kill the Indian in him and save the man." This principle was adopted across the entire boarding school system. The barbaric practices of this system resulted in long-lasting generational trauma that still has an effect today. Pember's mother, Bernice, entered an Indian boarding school at age 5.
My mother would tell me about her life at the boarding school on the Bad River Reservation in Wisconsin. And the school was St. Mary's Catholic Indian Boarding School that was run by a Franciscan order of nuns called the Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. And people in the reservation called it the Sister School. My mother told me the Sister School stories from my earliest memory, and always somehow embedded in the telling was the expectation that I would write about it and I would tell the world about her experience and, you know, as a path towards redemption.
The children spent their days doing chores and were typically given very little to eat. Pember says her mother recalls always being hungry.
My mother often told me about the Mother Superior, Sister Catherine, who was pretty brutal in her discipline. And she did recall one time seeing a beautiful apple down in the cellar, and she took it and ate it and just received a terrible beating as a result. But Sister Catherine was uniquely brutal in her discipline of the children, and the kids really feared her and hated her. And my mother would often tell me a story about one Christmas season when Mother Superior, Sister Catherine, fell down the cellar steps and basically, you know, hit her head and died. And she would say to me, "Oh, what a secret cheer us children did. It was the best Christmas gift we ever got."
Growing up, Pember never knew whether these family stories were completely true. Now, as an investigative reporter, she spent many hours verifying these firsthand accounts. To do so, she traveled to the archival library at Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where many of these records live.
I was looking at the records for St. Mary's Indian Boarding School, and I happened upon a administrative correspondence between the sister secretary of St. Mary's School and the commissioner at the Bureau of Indian Affairs, at the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions in Washington, D.C. And the letter to the commissioner says, "Well, you know, by the time you receive this letter, our sister will, Catherine, will likely have met her maker."
The letter continued with details of Sister Catherine's death, the same story Pember heard from her mother.
So I was alone in this big reading room at Marquette University at the Rainer Collection, and I stood straight up out of my chair when I read that. You know, it was kind of like my family's personal smoking gun, validating everything I'd been told as a child.
Looking back, Pember's own childhood was scarred from the trauma her mom endured as a child. Her mom had severe depression and often wasn't present and available to be the parent she needed. It wasn't until she was older that this anger turned into understanding and forgiveness. Another big moment of forgiveness was last October when former President Joe Biden formally apologized for the U.S. government's role in the Indian boarding school system.
His apology was straight up, you know, as the President of the United States, he apologized. But since I was kind of looking at some other stuff and noticed that the link to that apology on the White House website is gone. And I did inquire among several agencies, you know, what's up with this apology? Are you guys like not sorry anymore? What do you have to say about it? And I didn't get any response from anybody. And I contacted several people within the White House, within President Trump's press folks, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Department of the Interior. I even reached out to the Office of Army Cemeteries, which oversees Carlisle.
Pember says that despite the removal of the U.S. government's apology from the White House website, nothing can erase what Biden's words meant to her people.
I think for Native folks, you know, they heard the apology. It was a sincere apology from President Biden. At least President Trump has not officially stood up and taken it back. It's just sort of gone, you know, in this Orwellian kind of method that he seems to be operating his presidency. But I think that people still, we still see it as an apology, and I think people are going forward with that thought.
Today, there's the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition, a national nonprofit which continues to address the ongoing trauma caused by this period. Marionette Pember's book, Medicine River, A Story of Survival and the Legacy of Indian Boarding Schools, is available now online and can be requested through your local bookstore. To find out more about our guest this week, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written and produced by Polly Hansen. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
K-12.
Coming up, what are your biggest regrets to date when Viewpoints returns?
It's Macy's Friends and Family Sale, which means if you're shopping for summer, you can get insider deals on our best brands, even ones that aren't usually on sale, like an extra 30% off Hugo Boss, Calvin Klein, Levi's, and more. Plus, get 15% off beauty and fragrance. And with Father's Day just around the corner on June 15th, it's a great time to shop for dad. Stop by Macy's today and walk out with the perfect gift. Don't miss Friends and Family. Ends Monday, only at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Here's comedians and Skechers getting comfortable, presented by Hands-Free Skechers Slip-ins.
Hey, I'm Bobby Slayton, and I'm here with my pal, comedian, and Skechers ambassador, Mr. Howie Mandel.
Why did it take so long to invent something as amazing as slip-ins?
Maybe because all the inventors were focused on more important inventions, you know, like pet rocks and selfie sticks, and of course, seedless watermelons. You know, real important inventions.
But I know it seems simple, but it took Skechers to invent a better pair of shoes.
Yep. With Skechers Slip-ins, you just step it and go. You don't have to touch your shoes, and you do not have to bend down.
And we know how much you hate bending down.
Hey, careful, Howie. Family commercial. And by the way, slip-ins are for the whole family. Men, women, and kids. In all your favorite Skechers styles, from sneakers to casual shoes to boots and even sandals.
See, that's what I love about Skechers. They don't discriminate on gender, age, or shoe orientation. Even sandals deserve the best technology. We've come a long way, Bobby, as a society.
Yeah, well, speak for yourself, Howie. And by the way, you can find Skechers slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Do you ever wish you pursued a different career, or went back to school, or said yes to that trip you said no to? It's completely normal to look back and wonder, what if? Regrets, both small and big, happen at every stage of life, and can center around work, relationships, major life decisions, and more. Some people may regret breaking up with a partner, while others regret getting back together.
It's an emotion that causes some amount of pain. And the pain is the stomach-churning feeling that we get when we look backward and say, oh, if only I hadn't made that decision, if only I hadn't taken that course, if only I hadn't not done that thing. And it's unpleasant, but it's also instructive.
That's Daniel Pink, an American writer based in Washington, D.C. Pink holds a law degree from Yale Law School and worked in politics and economic policy during his early career. In the 1990s, he was the chief speechwriter for Vice President Al Gore. Since then, he's continued writing but dabbles in several subjects. For a man who's accomplished so much in life, you'd think he'd have no regrets. But Pink says everyone has something they would change if they could go back.
The only people who don't have regrets are five-year-olds, people with brain damage, and sociopaths. The rest of us have regrets. It's one of the most common emotions that human beings experience, and it's one of the most common emotions, obviously, then that business people experience. And the reason it's so common is because it's useful if we deal with it right.
But some people explicitly choose not to deal with it. In recent years, there's been a growing philosophy around the mantra of no regrets. This mindset pushes continuous positivity, and the main idea is to keep moving forward and never look back. While some may embrace this kind of overly positive thinking, Pink thinks that people miss out on important life lessons if they never confront past mistakes.
Regret instructs, regret clarifies, regret points the way. And so a business leader who says, I have no regrets, is also a business leader saying, I don't learn anything. I'm not willing to improve. And that's why it's dangerous. Now, the key here, though, just to be fair, is that when we think about our regrets, we should not ignore them. That leads to delusion. But we shouldn't wallow in them either. We should confront them. And one of the things that bugs me about this no regrets philosophy, particularly in business, is that it is a false display of courage. We think that no regrets is a sign of how courageous we are, and it's not. Courage is staring your regrets in the eye and doing something about them.
Recognizing these failures is the first step. One way to do this is by writing or talking about how you're feeling. Try asking yourself, what mistake did I make? Why did I make that decision? And what thoughts are going through my head? The physical action of writing or talking to someone can help turn abstract emotions into something more concrete. This process of reflection also shows others a different side of you and that you're capable of growth.
We believe that when we disclose our mistakes or our vulnerabilities, people will think less of us. And there's 30 years of science telling us that's wrong. That in general, not in all cases, but in general, much more often than we think, when we disclose our vulnerabilities, people think more of us. They admire our genuine courage and they empathize with us.
From there, take this experience and turn it into a teaching lesson. Is it possible to fix the situation? If not, how can you learn from this mistake? Was it action or inaction that led you to feel this way? This type of reflection helps steer people away from making the same mistake twice. Pink himself wrote down a list of some of his biggest missteps.
When I looked at my mistakes and setbacks and failures, I found that a lot of them, and this might sound odd, but there really wasn't a lesson. It was just like, sometimes things don't work out. Sometimes there's randomness and bad luck and whatever, and that's life. However, there were other ones where the source of the screw up was so clearly me. And there were two big mistakes that I kept making over and over and over. And this failure resume, this reckoning with our regret, exposed that, and now I make those two mistakes a lot less.
He was also curious about how other Americans felt about regret. With the help of a data analytics company, he surveyed almost 4,500 people, asking them a variety of questions.
When I asked Americans the question about regret, without using that supercharged word regret, I got some interesting answers. So I asked people, how often do you look back on your life and wish you had done something differently? So I'm describing regret, but I'm not assigning it the R word. We found that 1% of people say they did that never. About 15%, 16% say they did it rarely. And 83% of Americans say, yeah, occasionally I do this. And actually about 40-something percent said they did it a lot. And so this is a very prevalent emotion, regret. And my research shows that research beginning in the 1980s showed that regret is one of our most common emotions. It is arguably our most common negative emotion. So it is ubiquitous. And the quantitative survey showed that very clearly.
And what were some of the biggest sources of regret? Pink got thousands of answers from people across the globe. Many were similar, so he organized them into four distinct categories. The first focuses on foundation.
These are people who might have health regrets, like not taking care of their bodies or smoking, but also financial regrets. I didn't save enough money, or even education regrets. I didn't work hard enough in school. Small decisions that somehow compromise the stability of your life. Another big regret were boldness regrets. If only I'd taken the chance. A lot of people regret not asking somebody out on a date or not starting a business or not speaking up. So boldness regrets are, if only I'd taken the chance. Moral regrets are, if only I'd done the right thing. You're at a juncture in your life, you can do the right thing, you can do the wrong thing, you do the wrong thing. Many of us, not all of us, but a heck of a lot of us regret that. So these are things like bullying, marital infidelity, other kinds of cheating. And then finally, we have connection regrets. This is if only I'd reached out. And these are these regrets that we were talking about earlier, of often of friendships and other relationships where the relationship drifts apart. People want to reach out. They think it's going to be awkward, so they don't do it. They think the other side's not going to care, so they don't do it. They drift further apart and they regret it.
Another interesting finding from the U.S. study was that there weren't many differences demographically. The biggest disparity was that regrets tied to what people didn't do increased with age.
When people are young, they tend to have equal numbers of action and inaction regrets. But as people age, inaction regrets take over. And I think it's because we can resolve some action regrets. We can, as we were talking about earlier, we can make amends, we can undo them. We can try to derive some sense from them, but inaction regrets gnaw at us for a very long time. And so the more we move on in our lives, the more that what really haunts us are regrets about what we didn't do. We didn't start that business. We didn't become an entrepreneur. We didn't ask that person out on a date. We didn't go on to visit some place that we've always wanted to visit. That's what sticks with us over the long haul.
And there are also actions or inactions that couldn't be fixed. These are called closed-door regrets.
For closed-door regrets, if you wrong somebody and that person is gone, there, you can't undo that. You're stuck with that. What you can do, though, is use that as an engine for guiding your future behavior. You're never going to extinguish that, I don't think. But what you can do is you can take some of that pain and make sure that along with that pain, you're getting instruction. So what did this teach me? What does this tell me what to do next time?
It's important to remember that regret is just another emotion and a normal part of the human experience. The next time you feel that stabbing, overwhelming feeling of remorse, guilt, or failure, take note. Everyone makes mistakes, but it's what you do next that matters. To find out more about this topic and our guest, Daniel Pink, visit viewpointsradio.org. Also, check out his book, The Power of Regret, available online and in bookstores. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson. This segment is sponsored by Capital One. Banking with Capital One helps you keep more money in your wallet with no fees or minimums on checking accounts and no overdraft fees. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Progressive knows when you own a boat or RV, it's like you're automatically on vacation, even if you're actually a marriage counselor in the middle of couples therapy. But in your mind, you're camping in Acadia, puttering around Frenchman Bay. Your boat and RV are both protected, your lobster drenched in butter and... Uh-oh, did your clients just notice you weren't listening? Quick, do the thing where you just repeat back exactly what they said but as a question. They bought it. Now back to Maine, earning an automatic discount bundling your boat or RV with your home or auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Charmin Ultra Strong. You can use less, better than the rest. Charmin Ultra Strong. Your booty past the clean tech. Yeah. Salmon wave texture, it's the best. Study up, teach a lesson on fresh. Your booty past the clean tech.
Yes, sir.
Charmin Ultra Strong.
Charmin Ultra Strong with Diamond Weave Texture cleans better than the leading one-ply brand, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Peak summer wedding season is here. Before walking down the aisle, more couples today are adding an extra item to their to-do list, premarital counseling. A survey conducted earlier this year by The Knot found that out of 17,000 engaged or just married couples, about a third went to couples therapy. For Gen Zers, this number is higher at nearly 40%. Once seen as a last-ditch effort to save a failing marriage, couples therapy is now viewed as a way to maintain a healthy and happy partnership. And it's not just about avoiding divorce. Many people say they don't want to repeat the patterns they saw in their parents' marriages. One upside is that therapy offers a neutral and supportive space to have difficult conversations about common relationship issues, like where money is being spent or how couples talk to each other in moments of conflict. Experts say that while premarital therapy can't fix a relationship, it can help couples gain their right tools as they move into this next chapter. And for a growing number of young people, it's becoming just as important as choosing a venue or what's on the wedding menu. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. The Final Destination franchise is a horror franchise that never really gets too scary. Instead of using tension and terror, Final Destination almost gleefully depicts death and its design ruthlessly terrorizing groups of overzealous teens who have somehow escaped death once before. The franchise's trademark is that these teens are then killed one by one, typically through long, convoluted, Rube Goldberg machine-like chain reactions that somehow lead to a shockingly violent outcome. While other horror franchises like The Conjuring or Friday the 13th seek to unsettle and scare its audiences, Final Destination is more like a gory horror version of a Where's Waldo book. What I mean is that half the fun of an FD movie is in the audience trying to predict which items in a given scene could deliver a cinematic kill and which character is next on death's list. If all of this sounds depraved and weird to you, then I can't dispute that. Final Destination is a bloody and disgusting movie franchise that nevertheless keeps packing theaters. The latest installment is called Final Destination Bloodlines, and it managed to gross more than $50 million in its opening weekend at the domestic box office. The movie begins with a long introduction set in the 1960s that just might be my favorite extended sequence in the entire franchise. And then it comes into the modern day, where we see a family hoping to outrun death's grasp. With the franchise's trademark glee in hand, Final Destination Bloodlines goes on to show just how difficult the task of escaping death can be. And honestly, it does all make for a pretty fun watch if you're into that kind of thing. I'm Evan Rook.
It's Macy's Friends and Family Sale, which means if you're shopping for summer, you can get insider deals on our best brands, even ones that aren't usually on sale, like an extra 30% off Hugo Boss, Calvin Klein, Levi's, and more. Plus, get 15% off beauty and fragrance. And with Father's Day just around the corner on June 15th, it's a great time to shop for dad. Stop by Macy's today and walk out with the perfect gift. Don't miss Friends and Family. Ends Monday, only at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
You ever try fixing your car and realize you're missing that one part? Yeah, been there. That's why eBay's my go-to. They've got millions of parts, guaranteed to fit. I'm talking brake pads for when yours have seen one too many miles of stop and go. Oil filters, because you don't mess around with your engine care. Even got this cold air intake on my watch list. I might just go for it. To keep the ride cool and your DIY streak hot. Find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
D&D Tire and Auto Center in Park Falls brings you another chance to win with Civic Media's TrailMix 103.1 Text to Win contest. Don't miss D&D's customer appreciation event Friday, July 18th. Food, refreshments, prize drawings all day.
Progressive knows when you're on your boat, you're already on vacation. And vacation you forgets all your worries. Vacation you doesn't even keep track of time and knows that time is a meaningless construct designed to control us, man. But regular you knows you don't want to be too far out in the water after the sun goes down because vacation you doesn't know how to navigate in the dark yet. Vacation you and regular you really need to get on the same page. So bundle your boat with your home or auto policy and earn an automatic discount from Progressive. And spend the savings on the both of you. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
Summer. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer.
Win big during TrailMix 103.1's Text to Win contest, brought to you by D&D Tire and Auto Center in Park Falls. Be sure to stop by their customer appreciation event on Friday, July 18th. Food, refreshments, prize drawings all day long.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see a couple of rounds of showers and thunderstorms around for today. Some areas of smoke, too. Partly sunny skies and highs in the lower 70s with gusty west winds. Tonight, showers, a few storms still around with lows in the mid-40s. More showers on Monday. Right now, it's 58.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Mayan Vasta Betancourt.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, a curable disease that kills over 1 million people every year.
We should be worried about an antibiotic-resistant form of tuberculosis that spreads throughout the world and becomes this terrifying superbug.
But first, the dangers of excluding pregnant women from clinical trials.
Maybe in another 70 or 80 years, or perhaps less than that, it will seem just as antiquated to lack rigorous evidence about safety and efficacy during pregnancy.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
I went hands-free.
I went hands-free.
I went hands-free.
I went hands-free with Skechers Slip-ins.
Join the millions of people who are celebrating going hands-free with Skechers Slip-ins. Footwear you just step into and they're on. That's right, you don't have to bend down and you don't have to touch them, which is why people can't stop talking.
After trying Skechers Slip-ins, I want all my shoes to have this technology.
So how do hands-free Skechers Slip-ins work? It's like they have an invisible built-in shoehorn so your foot slides into place. Then our heel pillow keeps your foot comfy and secure. And Slip-ins are for the whole family, men, women, and kids, in all your favorite Skechers styles.
It's crazy how something as simple as a pair of shoes have made my life better.
I went hands-free with Skechers Slip-ins, and I'm never going back.
See what everybody can't stop talking about. Go hands-free with Skechers Slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
We trust our medications to be effective and relatively safe because of the FDA's rigorous approval process. However, the strict testing is a fairly recent practice that was spurred from a global tragedy just over 60 years ago. The drug behind the scandal is called thalidomide.
So thalidomide was a medication that was prescribed in several places, particularly in Europe in the 1950s, for conditions including treatment of nausea and vomiting of pregnancy, so what we might call morning sickness. And it was effective at treating conditions, but it also caused terrible birth defects, so severe limb deformities and death in many cases. And we think that at least 8,000, probably more infants were affected, with 3,000 deaths.
That's Alyssa Belinsky, the Peterson Family Assistant Professor of Health Policy at Brown University. Even though the drug was never approved in America, the destruction it caused had profound effects on the FDA's evaluation system. It strengthened the agency's role in drug approvals and required manufacturers to prove the safety and efficacy in human trials.
But in part because we had this shadow of thalidomide hanging over us, this rigorous standard of evidence, even from the beginning, always made a special exception for pregnant women. Actually, initially, all women of childbearing age and not just pregnant women were excluded from drug development RCTs. And so this policy was relaxed in the 1980s. And by 1993, there became a requirement to include women in these trials. But again, that was still quite recent. And to this day, even as women are included in drug development RCTs, our research published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology emphasized that less than 1% of trials enrolling women 18 to 45 enroll pregnant participants.
It might be less of an issue if the drugs were being tested in pregnant women after the initial human clinical trials, but that's not the case. In most instances, we have no idea how medications will affect this population because no one ever researches it. It's important to mention that this hesitancy comes from a good place of wanting to keep mothers and babies safe. However, Belinsky argues that excluding this population has drastically limited scientific innovation.
So we are just starting to learn physiologically what actually causes nausea and vomiting during pregnancy. There's a lot of things we still don't know scientifically about pregnancy. So, for example, we don't really understand physiologically what causes the start of natural labor. So we start by having real gaps in the basic science, and then companies that might be able to, for example, want to innovate on new medications are going to perhaps be more hesitant about developing innovations if they are working in these populations that are harder to research. So it's a really interesting pipeline challenge to think about.
Ultimately, this means that pregnant women today are left without drugs that have been proven to be safe and effective. Many times, patients are having to weigh the benefits of taking certain drugs against the potential unknown risk to their pregnancy.
And so in practice, two things happen. The first is that a lot of people choose not to take or prescribe medications when there is less evidence available. So we do see a drop off in medication usage during pregnancy. And that's because people are worried about potential adverse effects. But pregnancy isn't known for curing your asthma or curing your anxiety and depression. And in fact, pregnancy can come with a whole host of other conditions. And so it puts us in a situation where we may not be treating conditions, even though it might be more dangerous not to treat them than to treat them for both mom and for baby.
Though medication usage drops, most of this population still takes some sort of drug. In fact, the CDC reports that 9 in 10 women use some sort of medication during pregnancy.
And so the upshot is that a lot of people are still taking medications about which we don't have good data. And it's just harder to learn about potential adverse effects in ad hoc post-marketing surveillance studies compared to these really rigorous studies that typically are used to inform approval in the general population.
After presenting this work, Belensky is often approached by women who are inspired to share their own experience of navigating this dilemma while pregnant. In one case, a woman had to decide whether to stop taking depression medication that she had been successfully on for years because there was no evidence to determine if it was safe for pregnancy.
Other people have told us about struggling to treat nausea and vomiting during pregnancy. And I think this is an interesting case because it's one that comes up a lot as I think maybe feeling less important. So people say, oh, you can just tough out nausea and vomiting during pregnancy. And so one study that my colleague Natalia likes to point to is that there are estimates that last year alone, the U.S. lost about 56 million days of work to pregnancy-related nausea and vomiting.
Which speaks to the economic impact this lack of research leads to. Now, even if clinical trials start enrolling this population, there's a chance that these women don't want to participate. However, Belensky's new research asks this question, and the preliminary results have shown that while some are hesitant, there are others who would be excited for the opportunity.
People report being willing to participate when they are already taking a medication for a chronic condition. So that person that I mentioned who was trying to figure out whether to keep taking her depression medication, she told me, I kind of wished I could have enrolled in a trial because then at least someone else would have learned from my experience. I think we're really grateful when people are willing to participate in clinical trials. It's never something that we would require someone to do, but we can think about the systems that we already have for making sure that research participants are protected as much as possible.
The question of safety isn't unique to this situation. It's a consideration for every research participant, young and old, male and female. The fact that clinical trials are the gold standard for research doesn't dismiss the challenges or risks, but Belensky says it's the best way we can learn about medications while exposing as few people as possible. To drive this point home, Belensky and her colleagues conducted research published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Their goal was to see what the impact would have been if certain drugs had been tested in pregnant women, instead of excluding them from research.
So the first case that we considered was thalidomide. And the reason that we considered it is not because we expect it to happen again, but because it looms so large as a reason for why we should be hesitant about doing research in pregnancy. What we were able to show is that if we had done a trial, even if we hadn't been able to detect these effects early enough to stop a trial early and we'd finished a trial, we still would have averted about 99.6% of all birth defects that occurred. So then what would have been the upside of doing a trial? The upside of doing a trial would have been that having a medication to effectively treat nausea and vomiting during pregnancy would be incredibly beneficial and is something that we still struggle to treat effectively to this day.
The team also included a much more recent example through looking at the COVID-19 vaccine. Even though there were advocates for including pregnant and lactating women in this research, they were still left out. This forced the community to make a decision about receiving the vaccine without any evidence of how it would affect their health, evidence that was available to anyone else who wasn't carrying or breastfeeding a child.
And we were able to do some mathematical modeling to argue that if pregnant people had been included in trials, and as a result, there had been a moderate increase in uptake, we might have averted about 20% of maternal COVID-19 deaths and 8% of all maternal deaths from March to November of 2021, as well as 1% of stillbirths. The numbers there are inexact, but I think they're useful for illustrating the scale of potential health benefits that we could potentially achieve by running randomized trials in pregnant people.
Now, this change won't happen overnight. There are a lot of logistics and moving pieces to figure out, but thankfully, we have a good foundation to build off of. Part of our current testing standards includes a type of research called developmental and reproductive toxicology studies. The FDA currently requires most drugs to undergo these trials that specifically assess the drug's effects on reproduction and development, often in animal models. In addition, there are a few committees that have been focused on determining the best way to include pregnant and lactating women in research.
And these include recommendations focused on changing some of the regulatory language and requirements, some logistical and funding recommendations, so providing more funding and adjusting grant timelines to account for slower enrollment of pregnant individuals. They also include thinking about or different requirements or guidance that could be provided about the expectation that pregnant people should be, of when pregnant people should be included and what that inclusion could look like.
And though the progress is slow moving, Belensky hopes we'll soon look back on this period with the same astonishment as when we think about the lax safety and gender testing regulations from just a few decades ago.
Remember what I talked about in the beginning, that it was only in 1962 that we started requiring companies to provide evidence that medications were safe and effective. And it was only in 1970 that that evolved into the gold standard we understand today. And it was only in 1993 that women were required to be included. That was in the very recent past. All of these were in the very recent past. And so our hope is that just like 70 or 80 years ago, we didn't have any of the system that we have today. Maybe in another 70 or 80 years, or perhaps less than that, all of these, it will seem just as antiquated to lack rigorous evidence about safety and efficacy during pregnancy.
You can find more information about Alyssa Belensky and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, how can we prevent new strains of tuberculosis from forming? When Radio Health Journal returns.
It's Macy's Friends and Family Sale, which means if you're shopping for summer, you can get insider deals on our best brands, even ones that aren't usually on sale, like an extra 30% off Hugo Boss, Calvin Klein, Levi's, and more. Plus, get 15% off beauty and fragrance. And with Father's Day just around the corner on June 15th, it's a great time to shop for dad. Stop by Macy's today and walk out with the perfect gift. Don't miss Friends and Family. Ends Monday, only at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Charmin Ultra Strong. You can use less, better than the rest. Charmin Ultra Strong. Your booty past the clean tech. Yeah. Salmon wave texture, it's the best. Study up, teach a lesson on fresh. Your booty past the clean tech.
Yes, sir.
Charmin Ultra Strong.
Charmin Ultra Strong with diamond weave texture cleans better than the leading one-ply brand, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Many people know John Green as their favorite fiction author who's had multiple novels made into hit Hollywood movies. His 2012 book, The Fault in Our Stars, is one of the best-selling books of all time, selling over 23 million copies by 2021. It's the story of two teenagers with cancer who fall in love. However, these fans may be surprised to discover that the success of The Fault in Our Stars wasn't an endpoint, but rather a springboard for Green's other passions.
First off, it allowed me to be more financially supportive of causes I care about, like Partners in Health, an organization that has helped Henry a lot and helped hundreds of thousands of other TB survivors. But secondly, it allowed me a lot of creative freedom. It allowed me the freedom to pursue what I want to write about and write the kinds of books I want to write. You know, The Fault in Our Stars was the book that I felt deeply compelled to write when I wrote it. And Everything is Tuberculosis is the book that I felt deeply compelled to write this time around.
Everything is Tuberculosis is the title of Green's new nonfiction book. It has a quirky title for a reason.
My wife often jokes with me that in my mind, everything is about tuberculosis and tuberculosis is about everything. And that's very true. Like, history is tuberculosis, geography is tuberculosis, colonialism is tuberculosis, literature, art criticism, it's all TB. And so when I look at the world, I really do look at it through the lens of tuberculosis.
Every year, over 1 million people die of this entirely curable disease. The problem, Green says, is that in many places where TB occurs, the medicines to cure it are not available.
Because I, you know, travel a fair amount and spend a lot of time with people living with tuberculosis, I do get tested pretty regularly, and I've never had a positive test. But, you know, the thing is, if I do, this is a curable and preventable illness. And so if I do, I would get preventative therapy and have no problem clearing the infection from my body. This is what I find so frustrating about tuberculosis, is that someone like me can regularly access testing, can regularly access treatment if I need it. And I don't have anything to fear from tuberculosis, really. But for so many people, you know, that's just not the case.
Such as for Green's friend, Henry Ryder, a young man with TB living in Sierra Leone, a country in West Africa.
I met Henry in 2019 when I visited Lakah Government Hospital, the only TB hospital in Sierra Leone. And I was taken around the hospital by this lovely young boy who shared the same name as my son. And I was immediately charmed by him. He's extremely charismatic. He was like the mayor of that hospital. Everywhere he went, people were shaking his hand and rubbing his head. And he took me to the kitchen and took me to the lab and took me to the wards. And eventually we made our way back to the doctors I was traveling with, and they kind of shooed him away in a loving fashion. And I said, "Whose kid is that?" Because I figured he had to be the child of a healthcare worker. And the doctors explained that, in fact, he was a patient, and he was one of the patients they were very concerned about, because while he was responding with the antibiotics, that's why he was able to walk around and be relatively healthy. They could tell from the tests that he wasn't responding well enough and that his TB would inevitably come back.
While Henry appeared young, he was actually 17 years old. His small stature was due to malnourishment as a child, and contracting TB didn't help. The doctors were confident that his disease would return because Henry had a complicated form of drug-resistant tuberculosis.
Henry needed really a personalized, tailored treatment for just his tuberculosis. You know, anybody in the United States should expect to receive such personalized, tailored treatment, but in Sierra Leone, it was much harder. Henry was incredibly fortunate to have a doctor, Dr. Jerome Tefera, who simply would not give up on him and consulted with physicians at Harvard and all around the world to try to find a drug regimen that would work for him, and then convinced the Sierra Leonean Ministry of Health to approve those drugs so that Henry could receive them.
But Henry didn't receive them. As expected, his symptoms worsened. The swollen lymph nodes in his neck and shoulder burst through his skin, leaving open wounds. Once his best friend at the hospital died, Henry believed he was next. But if proper treatments to cure the disease existed, why didn't Henry and his friend get them? Green says the life and death decision came down to one thing: money.
My friend Henry's tuberculosis cost about $900 to cure. And he was repeatedly told it wasn't cost effective to treat his TB because that $900 was simply too much money, and that it was better to focus on prevention efforts. Well, my little brother had cancer 2 years ago, and even though his cancer was very curable, it still would be more cost effective to focus on prevention efforts. We know that, like, preventing cancer is cheaper than treating cancer. And yet nobody said to Hank, like, "I'm sorry, but we can't treat your cancer because it's more cost effective to prevent cancer." That's true. It is more cost effective to prevent cancer, but we should be doing both. And there's an expectation that we should provide care alongside preventative services. And I think that expectation is fair and appropriate and shouldn't only be fair and appropriate in wealthy resource settings.
The great news is that the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health finally did approve appropriate treatment for Henry. Within a few weeks, he recovered well enough to go home.
Henry spent years in that hospital, and those are years that he should have been in high school. He should have been able to pursue educational opportunities. He knew how important education was to someone like him, you know, living in poverty in a low-resource community. You know, he knew how much education could make the difference for him, and he knew what it meant to lose those years. Now, because he's an extraordinary kid, he's been able to finish high school, and now he's a college student at the University of Sierra Leone studying human resources and management, and he's very successful and doing really well and about to enter his senior year. But a lot of things had to break in Henry's direction for that to be the nature of his story. He had to have a lot of support, and that should be everyone's story. Everyone who gets tuberculosis should receive the kind of care that Henry eventually received, and they shouldn't have to wait years for it.
Here in the U.S., officials document 10,000 cases of active tuberculosis every year. In 2022, 565 Americans died of TB-related causes. Still, the U.S. has some of the lowest rates of TB in the world. But while it's both curable and preventable, it continues to be a global health problem. Green argues that this is a direct result of selective awareness. Reasons include inequitable access to healthcare, late diagnosis, and non-adherence to treatment.
Developing the cure for tuberculosis is one of the most impressive things we've ever done as a species. And we did it because we, you know, oriented all these resources around trying to develop new lines of antibiotics. And between 1945 and I think 1965, we developed 7 or 8 lines of antibiotics that can treat TB. And then between 1965 and 2012, we developed none because we just stopped being interested in it. When it ceased to be a problem in the rich world, it sort of ceased to be an area of pharmaceutical development. And that's part of the reason why we're so far behind the curve when it comes to drug resistance.
Without updated antibiotics, the new drug-resistant strains of TB are thriving. About 1/3 of international donor funding for the disease comes from USAID, which recently experienced major funding cuts and layoffs. Green says that as a result, tens of thousands of people with TB will die, and new forms of drug-resistant TB are likely to form.
We should be worried about an antibiotic-resistant, totally antibiotic-resistant form of tuberculosis that spreads throughout the world and becomes this terrifying superbug. But for many people, for over 1 billion people, the superbug era is already here because they don't have access to the treatments that you or I would have access to, and they don't have access to the cure. And so I think we should worry partly because we have an obligation to our fellow human beings to value all human lives the same.
Green's latest book, Everything is Tuberculosis, is available now in bookstores and online. You can find more information about John Green and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer this week is Polly Hansen. Our lead producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Greg Johnson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
When you switch to Progressive and bundle your home and auto, you could save hundreds, and that's a surprising amount of money.
Whoa, that's like farmer's market money.
That's like, give me a gallon of that locally sourced raw honey money.
That's certified organic heirloom tomatoes in every imaginable color except red money.
That's, let's get 2 pounds of pink oyster mushrooms money. I'm not even sure I like pink oyster mushrooms.
Guess it's time to find out, because you could save hundreds when you switch to Progressive and bundle. Then the world is your pink oyster mushroom. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Not available in all states.
You ever try fixing your car and realize you're missing that one part? Yeah, been there. That's why eBay's my go-to. They've got millions of parts, guaranteed to fit. I'm talking brake pads for when yours have seen one too many miles of stop and go. Oil filters, because you don't mess around with your engine care. Even got this cold air intake on my watch list? I might just go for it. To keep the ride cool and your DIY streak hot. Find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, raise your hand if you want to make your life a little bit easier. Great. Now raise your other hand if you like to be comfortable. Perfect. Now that you have both hands raised, imagine putting on your shoes. And that, folks, right there is your answer to an easier, more comfortable life. Go hands-free with Skechers Slip-ins. This is footwear you don't need your hands to put on. They can be raised in the air, and you can just step it and go. Why don't you experience what people can't stop talking about? Life-changing Skechers Slip-ins. Get your Slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Medical notes this week. A diabetes drug may be helpful in the fight against Alzheimer's. Research in the journal JAMA Neurology reveals a connection between two glucose-lowering medications and a lower risk of Alzheimer's. The drugs may have protective effects for the brain and could slow cognitive decline in dementia patients. Researchers are now looking at who would most benefit from this treatment and what safety concerns could arise. A tiny part of the brain may be the key to treating addiction. Researchers have been looking at a microstructure of gray and white matter. It's been an understudied region of the brain, but is actually a highly complex command center. It even helps regulate emotions and cognitive behaviors like depression and stress. Scientists are now trying to use drugs to target this brain region and help stop addiction. And finally, kids should join a sport to boost their mental health. Scientists surveyed more than 800 kids, ages 6 to 18. They noticed that physical activity seemed to protect young children from feeling depressed. While there's a brief break in this correlation in participants aged 10 to 14, the conclusion is clear. Increasing your physical activity is a simple and effective way to protect against depression. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Mayan Vosta-Betancourt.
It's Macy's Friends and Family Sale, which means if you're shopping for summer, you can get insider deals on our best brands, even ones that aren't usually on sale, like an extra 30% off Hugo Boss, Calvin Klein, Levi's, and more. Plus, get 15% off beauty and fragrance. And with Father's Day just around the corner on June 15th, it's a great time to shop for dad. Stop by Macy's today and walk out with the perfect gift. Don't miss Friends and Family. Ends Monday, only at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
On your period, sudden gushes happen without warning. But now you can say goodbye to stand-up gush fears. Thanks to Always Ultra Thins with Rapid Dry technology. It absorbs gushes 2 times faster than the leading store brand and gives you up to 100% leak-free protection. Hello clean and comfortable. With Always, fear no gush.
Thank you for joining us this week and every week as we break down the science stories you need to know. You can find all of our past segments and guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for daily content. And tune in next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
Shout out to Bigfoot listening on his blur tooth hair pods. This is Trail Mix 103.1.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt.